Welcome into a special edition of Monday Scramble. We are looking at the top 10 newsmakers of 2015. It was a big year on the course from PGA Tour to LPGA. We have it all covered, a full house here at golfchannel.com. I'm your host, Will Gray, joined by Ryan Lavner, Randall Mell, and Jay Coffin. Guys, we're counting down the top newsmakers of 2015. We're going from 10 to 1. We compiled the list, talked to writers, editors, Golf Channel reporters, and this is the group of 10 stories, players, et cetera, that we came up with. And we're going to start with number 10, Donald Trump. Not Donald Trump, the presidential candidate, not Donald Trump, the Saturday Night Live host, but there was plenty of golf and Donald Trump to talk about, and he comes in at number 10 on our list. And Randy, I'm going to start with you because you were there when his helicopter touched down at Turnberry, and the Donald took center stage at one of the LPGA's biggest events of the season. So what did you think?
Oh, center stage is the perfect word for it. His shadow fell heavy over it. Not only did he land his helicopter at in front of the Trump Turnberry Hotel, but he basically flew around the course so all the players could see him before he landed. His presence was the largest there. He was bigger than the event itself. The proof of that is the fact that outside the front gate, there were like two dozen cameras waiting for his arrival. Inside, you know, there might have been two in there because everyone was waiting for him.
Good or bad, though? Was that good for the event?
That's the big question with Donald, because as his influence is growing, he's got 17 golf properties, prestigious properties. He's hosting more majors. It's good for golf that the women get to go to Trump Turnberry. It was good for women's golf that they got to play the ADT Championship at, you know, exotic Trump National. But with his presidential bid, some of his controversial statements, not necessarily being politically correct, accused of sexism against women in the Megyn Kelly feud and, you know, the Mexican immigration issues. It's a very awkward situation for golf now.
Yeah, and that's the thing. When you think about it, I mean, this was something that sort of happened earlier in the year, and even though he's in the headlines for obvious reasons at the end of the year, this happened earlier in the year. But think about everything aside from that Women's British Open that happened. I mean, we were wondering, is the PGA Tour going to go back to Doral? The PGA of America decided not to have the Grand Slam of Golf at a Donald Trump-owned golf course.
Just said, no, canceled the entire event.
Just not there. They tried to find another golf course, didn't, and so that was completely canceled. So if you're talking about newsmakers, and one of the criteria is what did we talk about the most, what did we write about the most, we didn't write about him or talk about him as much as Spieth or Tiger Woods or a lot of some of these other guys that are going to be in the top 10. But we did a heck of a lot, especially early in the year.
Yeah, nothing's happened to Trump, though, which is the thing that's kind of curious to me. He's still going to have the World Golf Championship event at Doral. There's probably still going to be a women's major there in a couple of years. He's still one of the few people who are committing resources to golf at a time when everyone's kind of backing away and everyone's a little scared. He's still committing the resources, and that's valuable.
Well, as Randy said, it was not all good for the Donald, and he did have some comments about immigrants that caused the PGA of America, the PGA Tour, the USGA, the LPGA to come out with this joint statement that kind of said, we are separating ourselves from Donald Trump, from what he says. What he says doesn't stand for what our organizations are about. And so you mentioned the tournament at Doral. Are you 100% confident that we are going to be at Doral, or the PGA Tour is going to be at Doral? You think that tournament could be in jeopardy in a couple years?
In 2016, it's definitely going to be at Doral. Whether he continues to make these kind of inflammatory remarks remains to be seen, but it's logistically not possible to move a tournament of that magnitude with, 3 months to go. It's just not going to happen.
And hey, the 2017 U.S. Women's Open is supposed to be at Trump Bedminster.
Well,
the USGA had a chance. Yeah. They had a chance this summer to say, no, we're going somewhere else, and they didn't. Mike Davis was very careful in his language.
I agree with both of you, but we also don't know what he's going to say between now and next March.
Yes.
All right, now, we think, right?
Right.
But we just really don't know what's going to come out of his mouth in the next 3 months.
Before this show is over,
correct,
we don't know.
Correct. So, well, I agree with you. I think there's a likelihood it's going to be there. I'm not willing to bet the house on it.
The big wild card for me is still standing out a few years from now. 2022 PGA Championship is supposed to be at Trump Bedminster. And you said the USGA had a chance this summer to go somewhere else for the U.S. Women's Open in 17, but the PGA of America had a great stage at the PGA Championship to kind of say, we're not really sure. You saw all those banners at Whistling Straits. Every single future site was there. And then, we happened to run out of room for 2022. We didn't have one for Trump Bedminster, but they didn't. They said, well, it's scheduled. It's still on the schedule, but they didn't really come out with a full-fledged endorsement. Is that still in jeopardy?
Yeah, well, I think this is the thing. Golf has time for those events to bide its time. Like even 2017, Mike Davis, the USGA executive director, didn't have to make a commitment this summer. The guy who, and the PGA doesn't have to for 2022. They can see what happens. But it was the LPGA and Mike Wanu were in a tough spot. They were like 2 weeks away when this controversy blew up, and Mike made the, you know, they had the statement that they would prefer not to play there, and Donald Trump just jumped him for that. And so, you know, it was very difficult for Mike.
It's hard to predict that far in advance. I mean, he actually could be president by then. I mean, I don't know. We're not here to talk about politics. The last thing I want to talk about, in 2022, he could be president of the United States. So there's the point is there's so much that could happen. He's going to say so much, whether he's president or not president over the next 6 years. Who knows?
We will see. But there's certainly been plenty to talk about this year with Donald Trump, who comes in at number 10 on our Newsmakers of 2015. Coming in at number 9 on our countdown of the Newsmakers of 2015, it is Chambers Bay, the grand experiment of the USGA, hosted the US Open. Jordan Spieth won in thrilling fashion. Dustin Johnson gave the tournament away. But more importantly, we saw a lot of golf on some brown grass. So we got the group back together. Lavner, Ryan Lavner, do you like your greens as broccoli, as Henrik Stenson said? Do you like them as cauliflower, as Rory McIlroy put them? What do you think about Chambers Bay?
I love them lush and beautiful, but to be honest, I thought the U.S. Open was a great tournament. I think it was the best tournament of the year. It was the total package. You had the controversy of the course getting out of control. You obviously had Dustin Johnson's choke fest on the 72nd hole. You had Jordan Spieth winning back-to-back majors. Yes, the course was really the big picture here, and that's what everyone was talking about afterward. Yeah, obviously you had Spieth making history, but Randy, it was the course here that was really the attention grabber.
Jordan Spieth and Dustin Johnson bailed them out, didn't they?
Yes.
It was the most 100%. baffling U.S. Open ever, because all week long you're hearing broccoli greens, you know, or eggplant fairways.
I still see Billy Horschel doing the gesticulations on the podium.
And then at the end, it's the most riveting, fascinating finish, thrilling finish ever. You know, it was great. That's what I'll remember. I think we'll remember some of the controversy, but ultimately we'll remember what a great finish it was.
Yeah, the bailing him out, that's the perfect way to because it did. I mean, if Brandon Grace, you know, God love Brandon Grace, but if he wins that U.S.
Open, he doesn't park it on the train tracks.
We're not sitting here talking about how it was one of the top two or three best golf tournaments of the year. We're bashing the you-know-what out of it because it was a terrible golf course, and it did not produce the winner that we thought it was. So it is. So Jordan Spieth 100% bailed them out. DJ's three-putt of sorts bailed it out because it was a sort of a secondary story, and then he didn't show up for the ceremony afterwards and sort of, you know, and then came back a couple weeks later at the Open and had a chance to blow up again. So it was the golf, the players, what happened bailed out the golf course, because early in the week it was ugly. It was fun because you could go up to anybody, put a microphone right in their face and say, thoughts please, what do you think of these greens? And man, just start writing away.
This was Mike Davis's baby though. Do you think that he went too far, not only with the course, and you got brown, and I remember the pinball of the 12th hole, that drivable par 4, where you just kind of sling it up there and maybe it rolls 60 feet, maybe it doesn't. Switching of the pars on 1 and 18, that even when you get Jordan Spieth upset, you know you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, you really have to differentiate between a bad golf course and a bad setup. Chambers Bay is not a bad golf course. It's had two premier showings in primetime with the U.S. Amateur and the U.S. Open.
Just because it's hosted two events doesn't mean that it's a great golf course.
The number one ranked amateur in the world won the tournament. 2015, the number two ranked player in the world won the tournament. It is a good golf course. It's a great collection of holes. It's a beautiful piece of property. It is a great.
I so disagree with you.
It is a very good golf course.
Just because Uline and Spieth won at that course does not validate the course itself.
No one's arguing about the quality of the golf course.
I'm arguing about the quality of the golf course.
The players weren't, and they played it.
I think there were a few that argued about the quality.
There were compelling aspects of it, though. If the grasses had come out the way that they wanted them to, I think it may have been one of the best ever, because then you have a better looking course. It's still brownish, but you have a course that maybe is playing without the complaints that the players have. And it was hugely dramatic. The television shots sitting at home watching it were fantastic. It was a beautiful Open to watch, even though it was brown. Just the brawniness of that golf course, the way the ball rolled and bounced, it was compelling.
I tend to agree with you that it's a good golf course, but I don't know, because it wasn't set up the way it's supposed to be.
USGA killed it.
That's right. But so I'm not ready to say it's great because I haven't seen it the way it's supposed to be. But I think we can all agree is that early in the week, I mean, Mike Davis was too big of a headline earlier in that week, and it just has to stop.
Right.
Like, it just has to stop being about just playing goofy golf. Just the four and the five, the drive. Like, just play golf, man. Just sit like
you're so
like,
concerned like sit about here. What the par's going to be.
Correct. And who sets up all the other majors, the other three majors? We know who they are. But early in the week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, it's not about them. We don't have microphones right in their faces. They come early in the week, talk about the setup, and then they go play.
All right, real quick, the U.S. Open future venues are locked in through 2024. There's been some talk the Chambers could host again in 2025. Yes or no, going around here, should Chambers Bay host another U.S. Open?
No, but it will.
Yes, I want to see it with a better setup.
Absolutely. In 2010, they threw water on it, played like it should.
You love that U.S. Amateur too much. All right. Well, Chambers Bay was certainly in the news for a lot of reasons. That's our number nine newsmaker of 2015. He is no longer overrated. Ricky Fowler, three times a winner in 2015, and he comes in at number eight on our countdown of the top newsmakers of the year. Joined once again by the GolfChannel.com gang. Jay, we're going to start with you. We come to that poll in May, Ricky Fowler, overrated. That's the whole talk all the week at TPC Sawgrass and the Players' Championship. And on Sunday, Ricky Fowler puts on the performance of a lifetime, comes in red hot, mm-hmm. wins that playoff, and that sparks what's been a career year for him.
Yeah, it has been. Look, he came off of last year. Remember in 2014, you know, the top five finishes in all four majors. And, you know, and Butch, you know, we talk about it all the time. Nobody's ever got worse going with Butch Harmon. Yeah. So I think this has kind of helped, you know, not giving Butch Harmon all the credit because clearly it was Ricky.
Phil Mickelson on line one.
Yeah. Well, okay, but there's
ahead,
a little bit
ahead.
Of a history there. All right, there's a little bit of history there. But you know, when it comes, it is crazy because 4 days earlier he was sort of overrated. I mean, people didn't want to say it, but it was the truth. All right, just because he won the Players doesn't mean that he wasn't overrated four days earlier because he was this orange marketing machine.
If he didn't wear orange, correct.
Yeah. So it was. So let's put that aside. And that's not to devalue how fantastic his year was, because it was. He did everything but win a major, right? We still have the big three, and there was an argument if there's going to be a big four. There's not. But there's an argument because of the quality of the tournaments, of all three of the tournaments that he won, right? Yeah. Even the Scottish Open, and then winning a FedEx Cup tournament. So there's really, now at this point, there's no more overrated, but there is one clear next step for Ricky Fowler,
that's
the win a major.
Well, not only the tournaments he won, which were top-shelf events, but the style in which he won them. He closed in the fashion that you want to see a guy win the tournament. He's not benefiting from someone bogeying the 72nd hole. He went out, grabbed the tournament by a throat, and took it down.
Oh, that place was erupting with roars as he finished his round. Birdie at 15 in regulation, eagle at 16, where he hits a three-wood, 240 yards, barely clears the water, and it goes to 2 feet. Crazy. Birdie's 17. Birdie's 18. That is unbelievable. Birdie's the 17th hole three times that day, twice in a playoff. He hit more clutch shots in 2 hours than most players will hit an entire year.
Yeah.
When he won a 12 hole in 2012, it was a clutch finish. He beat Rory and DA points in that. But this was a certain level of excellence that we haven't seen. 6 under for his last six holes just to get into the playoff with the Players was amazing. He obviously closed out well at the Deutsche Bank and then the Scottish Open.
He hit it to 3 feet to beat Kuchar on the last hole. He's standing over a wedge. Kuchar's hitting balls on the range, getting ready to go, and then you just know by the roar. He's like, all right, I'm done. I'll pack it up.
Yeah.
I get beat again. So, as you said, Jay, the one thing that's missing is a major. Do you see this kind of as a springboard for Ricky going into next year? He's already shown last year that he can contend, but he hasn't really gotten there yet into the winner's.
Yeah, I think so, because of the nature of the fields, he beat, as you said, and the way he closed out. There has to be the confidence that he can do it on the biggest stages possible. And in the Deutsche Bank, which we didn't really talk about, he played that back nine under pressure. He was three shots behind Stenson. He didn't make a bogey coming in. He played mistake-free. He watched Stenson, a great ball striker, make the mistakes.
Yeah. Over-under for Ricky Fowler, 1.5 majors for his career.
I'll say over. I think he can win 2 majors.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll go over 2 majors.
Over 2 majors.
I guess I'll be the downer. I'll say under. But
somebody has to be.
We don't have enough time here. I gotta see. Get to 1, and then I think you get to 2. You're at 0. I don't know. But plenty of wins for Ricky Fowler. He comes in at number 8 on our list of newsmakers of the year. Another big year on the course for Rory McIlroy, but not quite as big as perhaps it could have been were it not for a soccer game in July. Coming in at number 7 on our list of the newsmakers of 2015, it is Rory McIlroy. And Ryan, I'm going to start with you. We see him start the year at number one. He wins twice in emphatic fashion at Quail Hollow and at TPC Harding Park for the match play, but then he misses that critical part of the summer, misses title defenses at the Open and at the Bridgestone Invitational. It's almost a year of what might have been for Rory.
Yeah, it's got to be the worst timed soccer game in the history of
golf. Damn that kickabout. Damn that kickabout.
It robbed him a shot at two majors, potentially. It robbed him a shot at the playoffs. And yes, he won in Dubai to kind of take the sting off what could have been a lost year. But it just robbed us of so much. There was so much momentum building towards that showdown with Spieth at St. Andrews. It's really just a shame, not just for McIlroy, but for golf fans in general.
Yeah, it wasn't just that he missed a title defense opportunity at the Open with the Claret Jug, but it was that course. It was St. Andrews. Yeah. It was
or two shots in the prime of your career,
right,
and he
squandered one. Exactly right.
And the way that that course, I mean, Jay, you were there, and you saw how that course was seemingly setting up so well for him. It was a little damp.
Yeah.
He was going to be able to fly his ball all around that place.
Yeah, and then coming off of doing what he did a year earlier at Liverpool, you're right. I mean, you hit it right there, Ryan. Was, you know, these great champions, a big majority of the great champions in golf have all won an Open at St. Andrews.
Yeah.
And you're right, he's going to get a couple more, right? Two, three, maybe four more. But this was the one, man. This was the one where he had it rolling. He's coming off winning it the year before, and it really stinks. We were basically robbed of being, as golf fans, of being able to see that. But I think you also look at it at the end of the year, he's still, given what he went through, it still was about as good of a year as it could have been, considering what all that stuff, the sort of the bookend wins at the beginning of the year, pretty good.
Four wins
at the end
worldwide
of the year,
It's
still pretty studly.
But
it's just Mr. Spieth and Mr. Day had a little, you know, did a little crazy business in the middle of summer.
And even though he did win that race to Dubai, once he came back from the injury, he never really had his fastball.
Yeah.
It was not, he's T17 right. And T20. He's still trying to get back.
Yeah, but finishing the way he finished in Dubai, not just one trophy, but two trophies. You know, it was like, hey, you know, I'm going to catch up to you guys, Jason Day and Jordan Spieth. I'm going to be racking up some trophies, too.
Hard to believe. If we would have started the year, that you would have thought that it seemed like Rory was clear-cut number one in the world. He gets caught not only by Spieth, but then also by Jason Day. And you've got this three-horse race right now. Real quick, if he does play at the British Open, is that the best event of the year? Is that the number one event that we're looking back at right now?
For this past year. Yeah,
we're
absolutely
living in hypothetical.
If he's there, yeah. That's kind of what we do, right?
We do.
I'm okay with that. Yeah. that absolutely. I mean, it's hard to beat what happened at the Open, at the U.S. Open, and then even, you know, Spieth sort of cracking the code there at the Masters was pretty spectacular. But Rory would have been in the hunt. I feel pretty confident that, you know, okay, maybe he wouldn't have won, but he'd have been either in that playoff or just he'd have been in the top five there. No doubt in my mind.
And he would have played the Scottish Open to get
the
some
week before.
Reps going.
Yep.
He'd be in fine form as
a gather. Yeah, like you said, three wins, four if you count the early win in the European Tour, but still, it's what might have been for Rory McIlroy, who comes in at number seven on our list of newsmakers of the year. It was highlighted by the concession that wasn't, but still, the Solheim Cup had a lot going on, and it comes in at number six on our list of newsmakers of 2015. Whether it was Allison Lee, Suzanne Pedersen, Captain Julie Engster, Randy Mel, I'm starting with you. So many topics from that final day in Germany as the U.S. pulled off an epic comeback.
Yeah, wow, Will. It really, I think, upgraded the Solheim Cup and interest in that. And, you know, there were interesting things about it, that Julie Engster's captaincy, the American captain, the way her personality rubbed off that team and that team was affected by her was a huge story. And yet, in the end, we're all really talking about one story. That's the phantom concession. Yep. That's Allison Lee scooping up the putt at the 17th, thinking that it had been given to her, thinking that the Europeans gave it to her and had it. And it was such a huge controversy we talked about for weeks after, which is good for the Solheim Cup, not necessarily good for Suzanne Pedersen, who was at the center of it, but good for the Solheim Cup.
Jay, if you're playing the blame game here on that putt specifically, between Allison Lee and Suzanne Pedersen, because they're not, it's not 100 and zero.
No. It's actually both. I mean, they are both to blame. But you know what? It was a perfect storm right there of all four of them, right? Okay, so if Allison Lee was playing with a Paula Creamer type or Christy Kerr, they would have stood right there and literally called a timeout. Yeah. I'm not moving off this green until Julie Engster, you get your butt down here and we settle this. But yeah, Brittany Lintzegome, as sweet as can be, just kind of like, oh, okay. And then you had Charlie Hull, who is sort of this
rookie,
this really young, sort of wet behind the ears, impressionable She is. She's there. And then you have Suzanne Pedersen, who's the big bad wolf, right, the big bad bully, who, this is what we're going to do. This is a close match. We need this point, and this is what we're going to do. I'm going to act like I didn't see it. I'm going to wait for you to scoop it, and we're going to walk away. So it was the perfect storm, because if any one of those four people were different, then we'd have had a completely different outcome one way or another. I don't know whether it would have been better or worse,
right,
but it would have been completely different. But this is great. I've covered 8 Solheim Cups in a row, and to have this kind of controversy and contention is awesome. It hasn't happened since back in 2000 with Annika, the whole re-chip and all that stuff. So this is what makes these team events go around.
Randy, you feel like this is the most memorable Solheim?
Definitely the most memorable I've covered. And it was interesting for golf. I told LPGA Commissioner Mike Wan, it was fascinating. You called it the perfect storm. It was. When you look at the way things happened, Charlie Hull and the caddies walking away as Allison scooping up the putt. You look at all of those things. I told Mike, you could take what happened on that green to an ethics class, and a professor could study it for the whole semester, because how can you be totally within the rules, as Suzanne Pedersen was, but violate the spirit of the game, which really you're talking about sportsmanship. And that was the fascinating component of this, and embodied why golf is different. And in the end, it was really, I thought, unresolved. Because in the end, probably 50% of the people thought Suzanne's okay, and 50% thought that, you know, it was a sportsmanship violation.
Yeah. And the crazy thing was that Suzanne ticked off the Americans, obviously, who thought this was unsportsmanlike conduct, but she also ticked off people on the European side. Yeah. Some of the greatest
Davies.
Supporters, Laura Davies, says it's an atrocity for the European team, and Suzanne's an idiot for doing this. Yeah. So it really just extended to both sides. That was the most interesting part to me, Randy, is that Suzanne came out looking like a villain on both sides of the fence here.
And we haven't even talked about Angela Stanford finally winning a point for the first time since about 1983. Yeah. And Jarena Pillar hitting arguably the putt of the year. Putt of the year from Jarena Pillar that saved the whole
thing.
Yeah,
there was so much on that Sunday. That Paula Creamer playing well, and she was was not a very popular captain's pick early in the week because she was playing so poorly. You had Michelle Wee break out of her shell. Christy Kerr went nuts. Yeah. You know, in those first 9 holes. So, I mean, you add all that together for this epic comeback that comes back, it's going to still be fairly forgotten. You're going to remember that the U.S. won, but you're going to remember how they won because of what happened the day before.
Sets the stage for 2 years from now in Iowa, because what doesn't say excitement than golf in Iowa? But as it is, the Solheim Cup comes in at number 6 on our list of newsmakers of the year. And at number 5, the youth movement, which is alive and well in the world of golf. If you want to win a golf tournament, especially the PGA Tour, you better be under the age of about 24, because that's all the cap is right now. Whether it's Jordan Spieth.
Randy, you and I are out of time.
Yeah, most of us are out of time. But Ryan, I will start with you. Jordan Spieth said in January at Phoenix, there might be 8 or 9 players from his class of 2011, high school class of 2011, who will play on tour. Seemed ambitious, but he might be right.
Yeah, you could really sense that this was building over the past couple of years. Everyone seemed to be waiting for this explosion of young talent. And there's a number of reasons for this, whether it's the influence of Tiger, technology, certainly leveled the playing field in a lot of respects. But to me, you have to look back at the quality of college and amateur golf for the real reason why this. Spieth has played against all these guys. He's beaten them. But Patrick Rodgers and Justin Thomas, they've all gotten their share against him, too. So now when they get on tour, they want to see their buddies succeed, but they want to beat their brains in too. And it's just that competitive atmosphere. It's really paid dividends.
That's the key right there, is wanting to beat their brains out. So Jordan Spieth's buddies all see Jordan Spieth do what he did the first half of the year, and they go, well, I used to beat him fairly often in the junior circuit. When I was 15 and 16, I used to take this guy's, we didn't take his money, okay, we took his lunch money. Took his popsicles, all right? We took his suckers, whatever it was. But we did that. That's what we did. I beat him when I was 15 and 16. He's now winning the Masters and the U.S. Open and talking about Grand Slam. My buddy, who I used to beat every so often 5 years ago, I can do it. He can do it. I can do it because I've done it. Sure, it's a bigger stage. Everything else comes with it. It's such a bigger deal. More eyeballs. You got to learn how to deal with all that, how to travel, the pressure. But you're right. They've done it at 21. They've been doing this tour-type activity, tour-type travel, living for 5 years.
But there's still something to be said about this group specifically. This class of 2011, I'm going to go back at I've got a stat here from the 2010 junior players at TPC Sawgrass.
I covered that tournament once by Michael Johnson.
You're stealing my thunder here. Michael Johnson wins the event, who's, according to our College Central expert, one of the best in college right now. But look at this all in the top 10. Spieth, Emiliano Grillo, Patrick Rogers, Daniel Berger, who's the Rookie of the Year, and Ollie Schneider-Jans. That's a PGA Tour leaderboard when these guys are 15 and 16 years old. As you said, they've grown up playing against each other and beating each other's brains in, but this elevated level of golf is unique to this group of guys.
And that category, that leaderboard doesn't even include Daniel Berger, Michael Kim, a bunch of these other players who are going to be making a spot
in
the PGA
Kaufman,
Tour.
Who was a year older, and he won this year in Vegas.
And these guys are all good friends, which goes back to what we were talking about earlier. It's that competitive atmosphere that they've been brewing for these past couple years. Now they know they can do it on the PGA Tour.
Well. It's not just limited to the guys. And Randy, I want you to weigh in here, because we also have the youth movement on the LPGA, not only with Lydia Ko winning a second consecutive race to the Globe, but the emergence of Brooke Henderson at age 17.
Right. Lydia Ko at 17 earlier in the year became the youngest man or woman to become number one in the world. She turned 18, became the youngest woman to win a major. You know, she's done the grand slam of youthful sweeps, of triumphs. And yes, the women's game, the men's game, as young as it seems, it does not even compare to the women's game. The average age of the top 10 player in women's golf is 23 years old. The average age of the top 10 in men's golf is 32 years old, even with this youth movement among the men. So the women's game, if you go to college, by the time you graduate, you're practically over the hill. I'm kidding, but only sort of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for sure. And as we've seen across this year, it has been a year of just leaderboards stacked with these incredibly
And just players. Another a comment about the men's side. Tiger at Quicken Loans was talking about standing on the driving range, and you're talking about all these young players, how he looks down the range and he realizes all the guys he played practice rounds with are on the senior tour.
Yeah,
so it's got to make Tiger and Phil, seeing these young guys excel, make them feel a little older too.
For sure.
Yeah, they've certainly moved the baseline for a player's peak years. It's no longer 32 to 35 where you kind of get settled into your life and the rhythms of PGA Tour. If you're not winning by 25, you're toast.
25? How about 21? Maybe hoisting the green jacket. All right, well, the youth movement coming in at number 5 on our list of newsmakers of the year. It was NB versus Lydia. It was Lydia versus NB with 10 trophies between the two of them. They were clearly the top players on the LPGA this year, and they come in at number 4 on our list of newsmakers of 2015. Lydia Ko, 5 wins, 1 major. She defends her Race to the Globe CME title, and she wins the points race for LPGA Player of the Year. Randy Mell, we also had MB Park with 5 wins, 2 majors. We've got some Grand Slam talk we'll get to, but she also won the Vera Trophy. So how did you think that this year stacked up between the two biggest players in the LPGA?
It was so close all year long, and Lydia made that surge at the end of the year to overtake NB when it didn't seem like anybody was going to be Player of the Year but NB after NB won those two major championships. And at the CME Tour Championship at the end of the year, I asked NB what she thought of Lydia's game, because even though they have two very different kinds of swings, they're so similar when you look at their stats. They're like 2 and 3 in putting. They're greens in regulation. They're like maybe 2 spots apart. Their driving distance is almost the same. They're so alike as players. And NB said, you know, she goes, when I look at Lydia, it's scary because we are so similar. And also just their demeanor. You'll see Lydia laugh and have more fun on the golf course than NB, but also they're both very stoic kind of players. So it was... it was so close, and they did clearly pull away from everybody else this year.
Yeah. Now, I know that the LPGA has a quantified Player of the Year race, but when you have a situation like this, Jay, where you have two players that both won the same amount of tournaments, and NB has 2 majors, and Lydia has 1, do you have a problem with NB not getting Player of the Year?
Look, it's probably – I don't have a problem with it, but it's probably not necessarily right. Lavner and I talked about this a few weeks ago on some of the video that we were doing, is that, you know, he wants to overhaul the points, and he's probably, you know, he is probably right. I don't think we give enough points to majors in the Player of the Year race, but it's also been the race that's determined every Player of the Year over the last 20 or 30 years, right. And it's been right way more often, about 90-95% of the time. So yes, we got this one wrong, but I think you also don't want to. By doing that, I don't think you want to dismiss Lydia Ko and what she did, because she did get moved to number 1. She's there every single week.
More
top tens, didn't miss as many cup leagues. So I don't want to say that NB should, because I don't want it to diminish Lydia. All I know is that it's pretty cool that we got a chance to really see the personalities of these two, because they were front and center all year long from beginning to end, right? We know, yeah. We kind of knew each of them separately, but now together they're a package deal. They're a package deal in our newsmaker. That makes it official. But they are. It's Lydia and NB. You can't talk about one without the other, and that's good because it boosts them both equally.
Very Twitter-friendly names, by the way. Short on characters.
Yeah, if we could get that NB and Lydia rivalry for the next 5 years, we're probably going to be in pretty good shape. But when you go back to the Player of the Year debate, the tie-breaking question is, would Lydia rather have her year or NB's year? It's two majors to one. She's going to take NB's year.
Yeah, I agree. I think NB.
You agree with that?
Here's the deal. NB did get the two majors, but I thought the weight of so many trophies was riding on that last event of the year that if Lydia had swept them all, if she had won the Tour Championship and won the Globe and the Vera Trophy, all of that, that had so much weight to it that she would have been clear Player of the Year to me in my mind.
You can't have it all come down to one tournament. Year. You have a Player of the Year, it's for the year.
If it's that close?
If it's that close, why can't it be the difference?
Yeah.
And here's the thing, in the final analysis, I think if there were a player vote, it's a hair difference, but you had NB with more majors, and then also Beth Daniel, the Hall of Famer, would tell you that the Vera Trophy was always the trophy that was most coveted by players because it measured excellence, not just every tournament, but every round and every shot. So that might have been, giving NB the bump.
There you go. Well, plenty of hardware between the two, but they basically played to a dead heat this year. And that's why Lydia Ko and NB Park come in at number 4 on our list of newsmakers of the year. He started the year with only 2 PGA Tour wins to his credit, and he won 5 times this year, including a major. Jason Day comes in at number 3 on our list of newsmakers of 2015. Ryan, I'm going to start with you. This was an incredible breakthrough year for Jason Day. He outduels Jordan Spieth at Whistling Straits for that PGA Championship and just gets so many monkeys off his back, including getting to the world number one.
Yeah, it's a similar narrative to what we saw with Ricky Fowler, to a player who was quote-unquote overrated heading into this season, because even though Jason Day won at Torrey Pines, that was just his second stroke play victory on the PGA Tour. Yes, he had a WGC, but still. What really impressed me this year about Day, though, was that he showed how high his ceiling can be as a player. It's that rare combination of just raw, ruthless power and a really soft touch around the green. So you wonder if he's at his best and Spieth's at his best and Rory's at his best. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure Day isn't the best player of those three, and you couldn't have said that at the start of 2015.
For sure. I don't know that I would go that far with Jason Day, but it was amazing to see him really raise his level and raise his ceiling. We saw it, Jay, at Whistling Straits, where all the players, they always say, I want to peak for the majors. Mm-hmm. And very few of them were able to pull it off. And Jason Day played his best golf when it mattered the most against the hottest player on the tour.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, back to Torrey Pines, it seems like so far away, doesn't it?
Can you name who else was in that playoff with him at Torrey Pines?
Seems like so long ago.
I covered it and I can't remember.
Yeah. Yeah, it was basically 8 months ago.
Can you?
Yeah, of course I can.
Okay, all right.
Harris English, J.B. Holmes. Go ahead.
Yeah, the thing that stands out to me about Jason Day, too, is how, they say history turns on small hinges, and it can be a fine line for confidence, because this, and Jason talked, too, about the tears that he had at the PGA Championship after he put it out, and part of it was the close calls that, he couldn't close out. Part of it was just realizing the journey, where the poor roots and where he came from. But you think about it, if he had not won the PGA, all of a sudden he's holding 354 hole leads in a year and not winning, and then we're pounding him
Masters
for that.
Gets so to be pretty big deal, yeah. And also too, I'm obviously the most impressed by the PGA victory, but how he followed it up in that FedEx Cup in the playoffs. I mean, it was always going to be Jordan Spieth for Player of the Year, but there was real talk about, hey, could it not be him after everything that he did, just because, winning all those events after already winning the PGA. Who would have blamed him of just winning the PGA, getting that monkey off his back, the ultimate one, and just saying, look, obviously I'm going to show up, I'm going to try to win, I'm going to play my best, but who would have blamed him for not doing what he did in the playoffs?
Well, I remember we were throwing out those hypotheticals after the PGA, be like, well, what would have to happen to make it a race? He'd have to win 3 or 4 events in a row, but that's not going to happen. And then he kept winning. He won the Barclays, he went to BMW, he gets to number one. It was amazing. But I want to look back, Ryan, earlier before he won that major, and look back at Chambers Bay, the Vertigo episode, everything that went on through there. It looked like he was going to withdraw at one point. He soldiers on. He didn't win the event, but just to be able to bounce back from that episode It was an incredibly telling moment.
It is, and I think that's still why you have red flags about Jason Day, whether it's his wrist, his back, his
whatever the
case may be.
He's got more ailments than he usually does. Prone.
Yeah, he's brittle.
And so he's one injury away from more time spent on the shelf and less time maximizing his awesome potential. But to gut through that and with the top 10 finish was really impressive. I think it showed Jason a lot that he could do that. You saw it carry over to St. Andrews. You saw it carry over then to the PGA Championship.
Don't forget, it's all could have been sparked by that 30-footer in Canada. That win turned his season around, launching pad into the PGA. But plenty of wins for Jason Day, who comes in at number 3 on our list of Newsmakers of the Year. It was not the year that he wanted on the course, but Tiger Woods still is a guy that we talk about plenty, and he comes in at number 2 on our list of Newsmakers of 2015. Guys, I don't know how much time you have. We might need about a half an hour to talk about everything that happened with Tiger Woods, but it was clearly a disastrous year inside the ropes. Jay, what was your key takeaway?
I don't have one. My main takeaway is that I think he's done.
That's a big takeaway.
But when you think about, the yips earlier in the year. It does seem like 5 lifetimes ago. But he had the yips, and we're talking. Literally sculling it like you and me on a dime. Every single time. To then getting it back enough to play well, play okay at the Masters. So then just all the various injuries and the surgeries and the Wyndham sort of out of nowhere. We talk about filling a roller coaster. This was, we go from yips to girlfriend breakups to maybe not retiring, but who knows when he's going to play again.
Pretty close to
it's
retiring.
You talk about the spectrum, man. We are all over the map with this dude this year.
I was there in Phoenix. I saw him yip it around TPC Scottsdale. That was the most surreal round of golf I've ever seen, just to watch him have absolutely no clue from 15 yards in. Yeah. It was amazing. And Lavender, you were there at Torrey Pines when the glutes activated. Hard to believe that still happened this year when we learned that glutes A, activate, and B, do not for Tiger Woods.
Yeah, it was by far the most turbulent year of his career. The bizarre injury excuses, not just the glutes. Remember at the Masters when he popped that bone?
That
was a little strange. That Masters performance, I know you talk about the Wyndham coming out of nowhere at T10 against Summit Wakefield. Yeah. That Masters, to finish in a tie for 17th, in the Masters, that golf course with those tight lies, with going away for 2 months and the chip yips?
Yeah. But even just remember, we saw Fun Tiger early in the week. He's listening to music on the range. He's totally loosening up on
the... It's clearly a diversionary tactic.
Yeah. Well, whatever. Hey, it kind of worked.
That, to me, what stood out about this year, Tiger, the defining moments, the revealing moments were off the golf course. It was, as you said, it was at the Masters. He's hugging guys on the range like it's more a family reunion than a major championship. It's a players' championship. He's talking openly about his breakup with Lindsey Vonn and how he couldn't sleep. Who is this guy, you know? And then his kids, he has them out in the par 3 contest with him. At the PGA Championship, he sounded almost wistful and sentimental, reminiscing about his beginnings in Wisconsin. And this was a guy who clearly, you know, you put it all together, accepting the assistant Ryder Cup captaincy, it all looks like a guy who's almost done.
And certainly seemed that way on the course. We saw his bad rounds were really bad this year. 80 at Chambers Bay, 85 at the Memorial. He had no clue at the old course, where we all kind of thought, he's going to get it back around. We look here at the injuries, and we really capped the year with, again, 2 more back procedures, and this is a real red flag. He spoke earlier this month at the Hero World Challenge where he said, I've had 3 procedures on the exact same part of my back. Nothing's really working. I can't rehab. I'm just walking around playing video games. I mean, that was an incredibly downer of a press conference to kind of listen to.
Yeah, it was really sad, and it just shows you how depressed he is at the moment. 3 back surgeries in 19 months is no joke here. Yeah. It's not a guarantee anymore that he's going to come back at the Masters or even in 2016 or even for the rest of his career. That's the kind of unknown that's hovering over him right
3
now.
3 missed cuts in majors, too. But the one he made is the one that you could maybe imagine him still having a chance in, Augusta National.
And that's the thing. We talked about all this. If you had we don't have enough time to do it here, but if you had a top 3 list of what were the top 3 biggest Tiger stories of the year, you can't really do it.
Yeah.
Is it the injuries?
You have,
is it the miscuts? Is it the exactly? Yeah. We have a five-way tie for first.
Yeah.
Is probably what you have when you add up the yips, the off course stuff, the 85, the U.S. Open was bizarre. I mean, he basically sucked the life out of Ricky Fowler.
That's how bad he was playing.
He sucked the life out of Ricky Fowler.
Yeah.
I mean, his terrible play just knew no bounds in this year.
And that tells you about how important he still is to the game, even though he's not playing great golf. Brandel Chambly called him the most impactful player ever played. Well, he still can be that off the course. And I think that's why seeing him open up with media and with people is important, because he can still be impactful in what he contributes with his opinions and his involvement in the game. And the public relations is going to be a part of that now.
All right, I want a yes-no answer. Does Tiger win another PGA Tour event?
No.
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 Whoa. Oh, you
wow. Swept the board with a no. Well, on that note, I do think we'll be talking about Tiger as newsmaker till about 2032, but we'll see. For now, in 2015, he comes in our list at number two. But now we get to number one. It's Jordan Spieth, because it's Jordan Spieth's world, and we are all just living in it. He pretty much won everything, and he pretty much became the youngest ever to win whatever he won. So it was quite the year for Jordan Spieth, $22 million, FedEx Cup, Masters, U.S. Open, you name it. He's got it sitting in his trophy room right now. Ryan Lavner, what's your takeaway from the year of Spieth?
I know this is a 2015 show, but the year of Spieth really began in November 2014 when he won the Australian Open, came back the following week, and won Tiger Shot by 10. That just kick-started his confidence. It really led to what we saw here. I'm not sure anyone anticipated he was going to win two majors and win $22 million in 2015, but his whole run began last year.
It definitely did, and you look at it, not only the runaway victory at the Masters to get that major breakthrough, but then to follow it up when the spotlight is on him. We're going back to Chambers Bay where he's got Michael Greller on the bag with all the local knowledge, and everyone says, well, this is Spieth's tournament to win or lose, and it comes Sunday, he's just hanging around, and he comes away with the trophy.
To me, that's even, I don't want to say it's more impressive than the Masters. It's equally as impressive for sure. I mean, the first one's always going to be difficult, the Masters. I mean,
it
was pretty good. Yeah, exactly, because of all the expectations, because this was a guy, for all the reasons, I mean, this was just supposed to happen, right?
But based on his finish at the Masters in 14, you kind of thought he's always going to have a chance at the Masters. But you go to...
But still, until you get the first one, though. I mean,
but there are so many variables in play at a U.S. Open, specifically at Chambers Bay, to come in as the guy with the target on his back, and he left with the trophy. It was amazing.
Yeah, it started late in 14, but getting through, winning that Masters was, you know, what took him over the top, because we're still, in our head, we're remembering he couldn't close it the year before as a young player at the Masters. Are there scars for that? If he doesn't do it again, you know, will that weigh it? The Players' Champion, same thing. The story with him, I think, still going there was, this is a guy who really hadn't showed he could close a big event on a big stage, and he's young, of course, but he couldn't do it at the Players either. That's all in his head. I remember after the Masters, his father speaking to us behind the 18th green and talking about a story that stood out to me was when Jordan left the Masters after losing in 14, that his comment to his father is, we're winning this next year. It just showed you the resolve and the attitude.
But the year of Spieth, I think it really peaked in July, where not only, remember, we gave him, not we, but a lot of people gave him so much crap for playing the John Deere. Yeah. He's chasing the career Grand Slam, or not the career Grand Slam, but the single season Grand Slam, going to St. Andrews. Everyone wants him to move to Scotland for a month and a half and kind of get acclimated. And he says, no, I'm going to go play the Deere. He not only plays the event, he wins it in a playoff. And then we say, well, and now he's gassed, he's not going to adjust. And he almost wins the third leg of the Grand Slam.
Honestly, that was the most impressive thing that he did this year. It wasn't winning the Masters. It wasn't winning in a top battle with Dustin Johns at the U.S. Open. It was preparing for 2.5 days at St. Andrews with all of that pressure of the Grand Slam and nearly winning the thing. He was tied with two holes to go.
He had it. He makes that putt in 16.
Could or should have been in a playoff to win the third leg of the slam. He came closer than any player ever has in trying to win that third leg.
And then he still followed up with a second place at the PGA.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing is, I mean, you talk about how fast we went from 0 to 60 here with this guy, all right? Right. I mean, you talk about the end of 2014, and I get all that, kind of ramped him up, but not just winning those two majors, but literally showing up every single time to play. A la Tiger Woods. I mean, we're talking, you know, the FedEx Cup. When you're talking about Jason Day, then goes to East Lake and does what he does at East Lake. I mean, this guy, every single time he shows up, he has a chance to win and is the favorite to win every single golf course he steps on. right now and probably for quite a while. And that is, you know, we like to compare these guys, and so it's easy to compare them to Tiger, but that is Tiger territory, winning twice in a year, all these victories, contending so often. That is Tiger territory.
And he's doing it differently. It's not with power and streakiness like Rory. It's with wedges. It's with great putting. It's with great
strategy.
Preparation and strategy. That's the Spieth formula that seems to pay dividends every single week.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, let's take a look at the full list of newsmakers. Now that we've got to our number one, we've got Trump, Chambers Bay, Ricky, Rory, Solheim Cup, the fun in Germany, the youth movement, Lydia versus Envy, Jason Day, Tiger Woods, and Jordan Spieth is our number one newsmaker of the year. Well, it's been a fun countdown. We've reached number one right now with Jordan Spieth. We'll have to see what 2016 brings. For Jay Coffin, Ryan Lavender, Randy Mell, I'm Will Gray. Thanks for tuning in.